This TFMR podcast is brought to you by your friends at JM Bullion. Visit jmbullion.com for all your gold and silver bullion needs. Well, hello again, everybody, at TFMR. Hey, it is Monday morning, May the 6th. And I'm going to be traveling again here this afternoon and unavailable and not in a spot where I can do a podcast. So I have a specific little treat for you I've lined up instead. And that's a discussion with Chris Marcus. And Chris, if you might recall, we've mentioned him a couple times in the last week because Chris, through his great site, Arcadia Economics, was one of the only and then last people to ever actually interview Bart Chilton now that he has passed away. So I mentioned that a couple times last week. And so when Chris emailed me and said, hey, let's talk, I said, you know what, that's not a bad idea. So in the absence of a podcast today, I thought we would record this audio today for your listening pleasure. So Chris, thank you and really very much appreciate you spending a couple of minutes with us.
Well, thanks, Craig. It's great to be here. Always fun talking with you and appreciate what you do. And certainly fascinating things happening in the world. So glad to dig in today.
No doubt about that, my friend. And just before we get started, tell everybody a little bit about yourself, because I know you spent a couple years working for Moody's. You got an MBA from Wharton. You were on Wall Street for a while as an options trader. And tell us so about your background and then a little bit about, you know, what you're doing with Arcadia.
Sure. As you can see, I just kind of followed somewhat of a typical Wall Street path, and it was fascinating. Just thinking what we were told on TV, Wall Street Journal, was how it worked, and went to Wharton, thought, pay attention here, maybe you'll get the wisdom. And now in hindsight, post the subprime bubble collapsing, which was really my wake-up call and led me into Austrian economics and gold and silver, and also seeing how, man, it feels like an indoctrination of Keynesian economics going through that system where maybe to get to the upper levels of some of these banks, you know, you really have to believe in the Keynesian money printing ideology. Certainly as I started talking about gold and silver, I realized after a while, you know, this just isn't what these guys do here. Fast forward a decade later, you know, it's just fascinating seeing. Sometimes I think of it as the biggest hypnotic thought experiment in history, where everything's pumped out in the media. You have the Fed officials saying their typical spiel. And I don't think it's that people can't get what's going on. It's just they've been given a distorted version of the truth yet, which is why I've been a fan of your interviews and your site for years, where, you know, you do a great job of laying out really what's going on. And I think there's never been a more important time for people to understand that.
I appreciate that, Chris. And I think that's a good segue for the main thing I want to talk to you about. And that was your experience with Commissioner, we'll call him, Chilton, in that interview you had with him back in late March. I never actually spoke with Bart. Though I could have, I suppose. He became pretty good friends with Andrew McGuire, and I'm sure Andy would have probably helped me set up if I wanted to speak with him. I never wanted to, though, because, I mean, I would have too quickly gotten confrontational. And that's just, I'm a salesman, right? I like to make everybody happy. I'm not like an attorney, right, you know, who thrives on that kind of thing. And so I'm not sure he would, and I have no idea if he would have ever come on my side anyway, because I'm sure would have known I'd have gotten confrontational with him. But you got to speak with him. And as it turns out, Chris, it was a month before his death from pancreatic cancer. I've wondered if he knew, you know, that he'd gotten that diagnosis like Alex Trebek and so many others. And he wanted to get a few things out in the open. He wanted to, you know, clear the air a little bit, whatever, clear his conscience before it was too late. Did you get that sense when you were talking to him at all? Or, I mean, how did this whole interview with him come about?
Well, it's interesting you mentioned that. Several folks have suggested similar, and I think it makes perfect sense to think that. The only thing that leaves me feeling differently is that It wasn't that he contacted me or a case where I'd been asking him for months, and then finally he said yes. I think it was about a week before we actually talked that I just reached out to him and asked him if he, you know, told him, I guess maybe folks don't know, you were actually an interview for this book that I'm doing on silver, where I wanted to create a book, get you, David Morgan, Ted Butler, all the folks that, you know, the experts, and put it in one place so that someone could sit down if they know nothing about silver and get some picture of what you and I and others have been doing for years. So I one night just had the idea popped into my head. I'm like, wow, that'd be certainly fascinating if we could hear his perspective, obviously given his involvement in the investigations and everything he's seen. And I just emailed him. He said, sure. I don't even think he had looked at the questions I sent beforehand. And it really seemed to me not a matter of feeling like he had something to get off his chest or that he really had to share. My take or my impression was just that he felt proud of what he had done, felt that it was important for some of this information to be out there. And it's interesting what you said about how you thought about it, but then, you know, didn't. And I wonder if anybody else had asked him before, because I think, you know, even in the process of doing it, I almost talked myself out of it, thinking now he won't come on or he won't be able to open up about stuff, which, you know, again, so the timing was just when I had happened to ask him. I mean, it could have been a coincidence, and maybe, you know, the stars just were aligned and he was feeling that way and did want to say it before he passed. I don't know. Just he was thanking me for getting this information out there, which I was, you know, I was appreciative the guy was coming on and talking for a bit. So just his tone led me to believe that I thought he was proud of what he had done. I think he wished he had been able to do more. I know there's a whole wide range of views of what he could have or should have done, and I can understand all of those. And but in terms of how it happened, I just asked him, and he said more than I ever would have guessed.
Yeah. In hindsight, had I known he was going to croak, I mean, I'd have called him 60 days ago, right?
Yeah.
That's just not the kind of stuff that you ever expect to happen. I do, though, think it's interesting that now we've got him, I guess we'll call it, on the record, you know, though it's not like he was with the Wall Street Journal. I mean, he's talking to you or me, you know, or an internet guy. But at least we've got this information from him and this recorded record of what he had to say, at the same time as we've got this guy Edmonds from J.P. Morgan, who's now been convicted. I mean, he's convicted of spoofing and manipulating precious metals prices. And as part of his conviction, which I'm sure he never expected to have happen, right? Nobody's ever convicted of this. I'm sure they won't convict me. That's why he didn't cop a plea. But then once he did get convicted, he's like singing like a canary, right? Because he doesn't want to do time, or he wants to minimize his time. And so now he's working with prosecutors. It just makes you wonder if some of these pieces will finally begin to fall into place later this year. Has that crossed your mind too?
It sure does. In fact, I'll offer potentially some good news for folks today, maybe cheer them up on a Monday. I'll be careful to say I'm not putting a date or saying anything's happening tomorrow, but just that Dawn Gill, who is the reporter for CNBC, who's been writing about some of those stories, she had seen the Bart interview, and we actually talked for about an hour last week, and she was mentioning, again, with Edmonds, like you said, that her interpretation of things being delayed again was that it seems like he's sharing information so that they can figure out who else is involved. Mm-hmm. Like you, the main thing that stood out to me from the Department of Justice press release was when he mentioned this was done with knowledge of my supervisors, right, and was widespread practice within the firm, which, you know, I thought was pretty worthwhile. You know, then you add in, again, whatever information they already have, what they might get. And certainly to me, it was like a lot of the mystery was removed between that and what Bart said. You know, again, where it's like we're not guessing anymore of who took over the Bear Stearns position.
Right.
We're not guessing anymore of how big it was. I mean, here, you know, here was someone with the trading records where I think a lot of us have sat there for the last decade, read Ted Butler, and, you know, I know everyone has their own opinion. I think the majority of what he's saying is pretty spot on and feel very similarly. And now it's confirmed. It's gone from conspiracy theory to fact. And so I guess what left me excited, again, I know some, you know, Bill Murphy did a whole interview with is either Wall Street Journal or CNBC, and then it got cut. And I get it that, you know, who knows what happens on the higher up in a mainstream media. Yet just after talking with her for an hour and hearing the people she's talking to, and she certainly sounds like you or I in terms of being fascinated and wanting to get to the truth. So regardless of what happens with any individual person, you know, I've had a bunch of folks contact me about the Bart Chilton interview, and to the degree that it's out there, and see, I don't see this situation with silver, gold as well, but silver in particular, you know, it's not like, you know, you like chocolate ice cream and I don't, a matter of opinion. Certainly now that, especially that we have confirmation of some of these things from a legal setting, let alone the guys in these agencies that have access to the trading records, which, I mean, Craig, I would imagine if you could look up the trading records, you know, you could probably build a pretty darn good case that's hard to defend against. So whatever happens, whether it's the Department of Justice, I mean, I wonder what they've been doing on some of these price plummets last couple weeks. But whether it's them or not, you know, there's also some degree that I've always thought about that, you know, you have a bit of a prisoner's dilemma in the market where the only thing I can figure is that, you know, some of the, you know, whether it's China or whoever is saying, all right, if we can get physical silver for $15, then we'll sit there and take as much as we can. But really only takes one group to get a little trigger happy and say, all right, I'm just going to start forcing it.
Right. And you know, we all anticipate that day, that's for sure. The only other thing I'd add to what you said, and I mean, obviously everybody here on this side has heard me talk about this for years. They had, and I know this with pretty good source of knowledge on this, the CFTC was given everything in 2012, official legal documents with whistleblowers from JP Morgan, and they sat on it for a year. Once Andrew McGuire went public, finally trying to force their hand, they closed their silver investigation the very next day after they'd had it open for 5 years. And then the chief investigator of the CFTC abruptly resigned 48 hours later without, you know, saying he was going to take another job. So we have that. And that's all part of my frustration with Bart, you know, kind of painting himself as a, you know, the knight in shining armor that was doing his best for us. But I'm not going to talk badly about, you know, now that he's no longer with us. The other thing, Chris, and I just would remind everybody of this, in a 30-second nutshell now, what we know, and just tell me if you think this is how you think the pieces fit together. We know Bart told everybody through you that, yeah, JP Morgan did assume the position of Bear Stearns. So they go rolling into 2010 with this massive, let's call it 20, 25,000 contract, whatever it is, short position, that the CFTC tells them they got to get rid of. They never do. Then they get squeezed in 2011, end of 2010 into 2011. And we know from the CFTC's data that the last month, really, from 38 to 48 in April of 2011 was a commercial short squeeze. So then the rules get rigged with margin hikes, you know, and we had the Sunday massacre and all that stuff. And the price gets slammed back down. JP Morgan essentially got you know, this position that they were mismanaging with no physical silver behind it. They got squeezed pretty hard. Now, because they were allowed to open, rush, rush, hurry, hurry, a silver vault also in 2011, they now have over 150 million ounces of silver in their COMEX vault. And the reason why the COMEX vault has as much silver as it's ever had before is because of the 150 million ounces that JP Morgan has that they didn't have 8 years ago. So now they can at least say, oh, yeah, we're just hedging. You know, we got this. We have to have all the, you know, all these 30,000 contracts that were short because we're hedging 150 million ounces that we own. And the CFTC lets them get away with it. And they conceivably now have physical metal that they can deliver should they ever get squeezed again. Okay, so there you go. There's about 90 seconds, not 30 seconds. But do you think that's how the pieces fit together, Chris?
That sounds pretty spot on to me. Although maybe one slight twist, you mentioned they'd have physical metal if they get squeezed. Appears that now they're long COMEX contracts as well.
Yeah.
So it's I'll tell you from a trading standpoint, you know, again, my background was as an equity options trader, and certainly the idea that they had a position that large, that I was always stunned that they were able to work out of it. That would have seemed like landing on Mars to me. So it's I think it's a really good, accurate description. One last note on that. I have thought before that if they opened that warehouse in April of 2011, you would think that's something that has to be planned a little bit beforehand, which makes you wonder how much of all this was planned or orchestrated. It's kind of hard to know what small fraction of any market activity is really buyers and sellers these days.
Well, that's for sure, too. And you're right. They may have been thinking about that in 2009 or 10 and thinking they had time to accumulate the silver to back all those contracts. That's pretty good business. You know, if you can just simply sell futures against it and control the market, that's a nice regular income stream that they can make. And anyway, that's, I just think it's interesting that, again, and I appreciate your work that you got a chance to get Bart on the record, so to speak, before his untimely passing. Chris, I just want to ask you one more thing. Just in reference to your experience in Wall Street and your background, you know, we talk a lot on this site about Bernanke, this shows you how long I've been doing this shit. Powell, yeah. Not Bernanke, not Yellen,
maybe it's just one guy they roll out, put a different mask on the head, say the same thing, save a couple bucks.
Yeah, Arthur Burns is trapped. the Fed, you know, has painted themselves into a corner, and they put out this narrative, you know, as if they have control, when really it's just been one grand experiment ever since the whole thing blew up 10 years ago. What does your experience tell you about where this is all headed here in 2019? I mean, are we headed back toward more cuts? Does the market need more liquidity? And thus they're going to do everything they can to keep the stock market afloat? Or what are your expectations here this year?
Well, it sure seems to me like they've made pretty darn clear that they're going to do what they've always done, which, you know, a lot of the folks in the silver world have been writing about for the past decade, where it says zero interest rates, quantitative easing, you know, and we're going to unwind it. And we've all been sitting here saying, all right, good luck. Let me know when you're going to do that and how you're ever going to pull that off. Sure enough, last year, rates go up a little. I mean, it wasn't like we really normalized it. And to put that into perspective, I believe Greenspan's last hike after he took rates down to 1% for a year was back in 2006, and he brought it up to 5.25%. Here we're getting up to 2.5%, and the whole thing looked pretty wobbly last fall. Then you have now the president is coming in, and he wants to, I mean, first he didn't want to raise rates, now he wants a 1% cut. And I'm sure that's probably what the Fed wants as well. And actually, I think it's fascinating because, again, you have that same pattern. Now the media is focusing on, wow, are they reducing? Is Trump stepping on the central bank's independence? And does it matter?
Right.
They put the Fed in the White House. They all doing the same thing, and I'm so baffled by the Trump thing because, you know, his campaigning, you know, Fed's should be audited, gold standard, stock market's a big fat bubble. Now he says the opposite. I know there's that some folks who believe he's playing a very sophisticated chess match and realizes what's going on, which some days is easier than others to believe. I don't know yet in the end, you know, we're a decade after the crisis. Well, after the first QE, I mean, the whole thing really started unraveling in 2007. So, I mean, if quantitative easing and printing money through lowering interest rates works, you know, when is it going to work? And then
right,
you have everyone is telling everybody in the public, oh, the economy's never been stronger. Look at the stock market. Well, we saw what happened to the stock market when you take away the printed money. And here it is, the stock market's strong. And in terms of that interest on excess reserves rates, I would say anyone who really wants to understand it more clearly, not the easiest thing to decipher, but our friend Dave Kranzler did a great write-up in today's Short Sellers Journal, which I would say folks should be reading anyway with the stuff he puts in there.
Agreed.
But again, you have, it's a small measure, but seems to me, again, they're realizing the experiment is running into problems. It's another, like, you know, fill this hole while you're scrambling to fill the other one. And, I mean, I'll put it like this. If anyone wants to make an even money bet on the Fed undoing more of the balance sheet or raising interest rates this year, you know, let me know, because I don't see that happening, and they've told you they don't see it happening.
Right, right. No, I agree with you, my friend. It's going to get even more interesting, I think, as excuse me, as the year progresses. There's a lot coming their way. They try to simplify it, make it sound like they've got it all under control, but they clearly don't. Whether that immediately translates into a breakdown in their control of the precious metals, well, we'll just have to see. In the meantime, though, I think you and I will probably have to keep in touch and monitor this as we go along. I really appreciate you taking the time to visit, though, here short notice on a Monday. And like I said, I look forward to talking to you again sometime, Chris.
Yeah, Craig, it's a pleasure joining you and talking with you again. And certainly, I think it's going to be fascinating times. Fortunately, I don't think people have to be panicked about this stuff. When you get what you're sharing on your site, you know, you can prepare and have things in place. And I think the more that, you know, we all focus on the positives that are happening, I mean, there's enough stuff out there, but it's great how you've brought a lot of people together and keep sharing that. And I do think there are things we can do, and just, you know, banding together.
Yep.
Does make a difference.
We try to warn all those that are willing to listen. That's for sure. My friend, thank you again. I appreciate it. And I know you're often on the site. Please feel free to stop by this thread. If anybody has any extra questions and stuff, you might have fun kind of interacting with them. And again, I want to thank everybody for listening. But Chris, thanks for your time.
Thank you, my friend. Talk to you soon.
All right. And thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll get back to a regular schedule on Tuesday.